You solemnly swear the evidence you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Welcome to Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I.
Come on, Johnny, you might as well talk. Who robbed that payroll truck?
I've read the case files, have you?
This sure gives an airtight alibi.
Crime Time is heard exclusively on Biz Talk Radio. Check out podcasts of our shows or listen live at biztalkradio.com. And now, your host of Crime Time, Vito Colucci, P.I.
Well, good evening, everybody. Another Sunday night, another Crime Time with Vito Colucci, P.I. on the Biz Talk Radio Network. Just like the introduction you heard, at any time during the week, you can go on biztalkradio.com and hear us at many, many places. I thank you for all the listeners that call and write in and everything else we got going. Special show tonight. We're going to have a lady on that is a premier attorney in the Chicago, Illinois area. And I'll give you a little background on her. Karen Conti is a practicing lawyer, educator, and media personality from Chicago with the law firm of Conti Law. As one of Chicago's most prominent lawyers, Karen has actively practiced law for 33 years and has handled numerous high-profile cases, including the death row appeals for serial killer John Wayne Gacy and an appeal to the United States Supreme Court on behalf of the Democratic Party. She has been a legal analyst on both television and radio for over 20 years. She is a designated legal expert for the local Fox affiliate, where she gives weekly commentary and regularly appears on CNN, MSNBC, and other media outlets. She hosts her own weekly radio show on WGN Radio in Chicago. She's been an adjunct professor at law for over 25 years and regularly lectures and speaks on a variety of legal issues, including the death penalty, family law, and women in practice. Now, what I say every week with the show, we are a no politics zone. So when you tune in every week, you're not going to hear anything of politics on this show. You got plenty of stations, TV, and radio to hear that. So you will not hear that here. You're free of that here. Okay, so I'd like to introduce Karen Conti. Karen, welcome.
Hi, Vito. How are you? What a nice introduction. Some of it might even be true.
Well, you know, I just had to put my gun on because it's a no politics zone. You know what I mean? So we have to
watch out. That's a great idea.
Isn't that really, and listen, folks, I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican. I'm tired of that's all I'm hearing on TV. That is it. There was a time I did Fox News so many times throughout the years, and every minute is that way, as well as the other stations I did. But anyway, enough talk. I said I wasn't going to do that now. You see what I did, Karen? Now, listen, we're talking about a big case tonight. Jussie Smollett, you might have to be on Mars to have him hear this case over the last couple of weeks. I'm so glad I didn't get called for a show, because first time in my life I can actually say I would not know how to explain what is going on in that case. So I got you on here as an attorney to talk a little bit more about it, okay? One of the things here, see, you're going to state facts for people who don't know this story, because initially Jussie Smollett was deemed to be a victim. That's what I heard for quite a while. What happened to have the police consider Smollett's story as hoax?
Well, you know, Smollett made some claims with the police that he had gotten some threats in the mail and some white powder and the like, and he didn't like, apparently, the way the police handled it. And so he then said to the police that he had these two guys from Africa who were, turns out later, were associated with his show, the Empire Show, that attacked him. And they put a noose around his neck, and they poured bleach on him, and they used racial epithets and all of those things. So Smollett made a claim to the police that he had been attacked, and he had some medical evidence of it and the like. And he was a victim, and people felt sorry for him, and people thought this was a homophobic, racial crime, a hate crime, and the police had devoted an inordinate amount of resources to try to find out who did it and why.
So, in other words, He added the part about the other two people, not right away that first day or first week. He kind of added that after a little bit. See, as an ex-cop, right away I'm saying, well, wait a minute, that's big. You tell me my initial interview of you, you know?
Right, and he, you know, I think at first he said he didn't know who they were and he didn't identify them and they were off of the security cameras. So I think after a while what happened, Vito, is everyone in the whole community felt terrible for him. I mean, we have a very liberal community in Chicago and we welcome the actors who come in and do that show and we see them about town and we like them and, you know, people like the show. And so the world kind of went on Jesse's side. And then all of a sudden the police seemed to be saying that maybe Jussie Smollett was not the victim and in fact had made this up and it was a hoax. And so we then heard that the investigation was turning towards Smollett as a perpetrator rather than a victim.
Right. So the police conducted a thorough investigation. Okay. They started coming up with that conclusion then. And then what happens? The state's attorney charged Jussie Smollett. What crime and what was the potential sentence for something like that?
Well,
16 counts, if I remember, 16 counts.
It was 16 counts of disorderly conduct. And in Illinois, as in many jurisdictions, disorderly conduct is sort of a catch-all crime for various things that people do that disrupt the public. And one of them in Illinois is making a false police report. That gets categorized as disorderly conduct, even though it doesn't quite sound like that's the right crime. So what was unusual about this is there were 16 counts, and what the police did was such a thorough investigation. If your listeners are very interested, they can go and just Google proffer statement, P-R-O-F-F-E-R, and this is a statement that is given to the judge by the prosecutors that sets forth all of the elements of the crime and the timeline and the text and the exact language that was used in the text and everything that the police put together to charge Jussie, have Jussie charged. And this was charged by our state's attorney as 16 counts of disorderly conduct. And everyone was shocked. You know, here was a guy who was the victim. Now he's not the victim. Now there's this huge number of charges. And we were all very, very surprised.
Yeah, see, where I come from and being an ex-police officer, I'm surprised that giving a false statement to the police just comes over a disorderly conduct. It kind of just doesn't make sense to me with that, but, you know, each state is different.
That's correct. And the possible sentence, you know, is not great in a case like this, especially when you have somebody who doesn't have a prior background, but certainly someone could do up, you know, 1 to 3 years in jail for this, not to mention a fine. So, yes, we were all shocked. Now he's on the defensive, and now we're just trying to figure out what happened here and why. And if he did this, and it seems like he did from reading this proffer statement, which is so detailed and has so many facts in it that seems like the whole case was just sewn up and that the prosecutors couldn't possibly lose it, why did he do this?
Right. And the police chief, I've seen him many times on television, he seems like going out of his mind with it as far as the evidence he feels he has, as well as the, you know, the whole police department and whatever else is going on there. How did this change, though? How did this you're the attorney. I'm just an ex-police officer and a private detective for 28 years here. How can you just say, and there's a lot behind it, but how could you just say, nah, all right, they're gone. The charges are gone. I mean, that's what the public is saying, that don't know, you know, the court system like you and me, okay? How could it just disappear like that, and that's the end of it?
Well, the prosecutors have great authority and discretion to charge the case in the first place and to drop the charges in the second place. And people need to understand that that's why prosecutors are so important, and that's why when we elect our prosecutors, you should always know who you're voting for, because you need to understand that even if there's a crime committed and we know who did it, the prosecutors can choose not to charge. But when they do charge, they really do, and they're under the obligation of making sure they can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. So even if they believe there's a crime that was committed and that the person committed the crime, they are not supposed to ethically bring the charges unless they think they have all of the evidence necessary to overcome that burden beyond a reasonable doubt. So to charge this case in a way that a lot of people said was overkill, 16 counts, right? And then to all of a sudden drop it? I mean, usually there's a plea bargain, maybe to one charge. Maybe there's a plea bargain where they do community service. But to drop the charges altogether, expunge the record, and seal the record seemed to us to be incomprehensible.
Right. We only have a couple of seconds before we go to a break. But when we come back, I do want to talk to you about the two other gentlemen, Abel and Ola, I think their names are, that came involved in this, the ones that supposedly did the harm to Jesse. So we're going to talk about that in a little bit and see how they came involved, how far down the road did they come in, did they help, things they said by getting it thrown out or whatever. You know, it's very, very strange case, and I'm learning a lot from you today, finally. So we're going to be coming back in a few seconds for the second part. Stand by, everybody.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are gonna win.
Nobody does it better. Makes me feel sad for.
We are back with Crime Time. Carly Simon's song, Nobody Does It Better. And I think that would be apropos tonight for our guest, Karen Conti, who does her work and she does it excellent. I'm reading up on her a lot of times here, and plus we've talked before. So thank you, Karen, again for being on the show.
My pleasure, Vito.
Okay, now, who are these fellas, Abel and Ola? And how did they get involved in this?
Well, and this is allegedly, of course, but in the proffer statement, which is that prosecutor's statement of what the facts and what the evidence would show, they are two brothers. They're very fit, and there's pictures of them all over the internet that you may have seen. And they were working for Empire in some capacity, and apparently they were, at least one of them, was physically training Jesse. Jesse needed to drop some weight for some episodes, and he hired one of them, at least, to do some personal training to get him into shape. So there was a prior relationship between Jesse Smollett and his two brothers. And apparently the videotape and all of the evidence and all of the investigation showed that these were the two gentlemen who perpetrated the attack on Smollett. But they were interviewed extensively for basically 2 days in a row. And they apparently said to the prosecutors, hey, listen, this was all concocted by Jesse. He was mad because he wasn't making enough money. He was mad because he was getting written out of the script in the show. And he wanted to generate some publicity for himself and to generate some sympathy. And he wanted us to do this, stage this this attack. And he paid us for it. And we did it. And that's what's in that report. Yeah.
Wow. So now the actual police report has not been out for the public to see it yet, because, it's still an ongoing, it's not an ongoing case. They threw it out. So what's your law there in Illinois?
Well, it should be public record, but because of some very strange things that have happened in our system, the prosecutor agreed to seal the record and to seal all the evidence in the case. Now, we have heard conflicting things about whether or not the prosecutors are going to open up those records. We in Chicago, I mean, the police department, the public, the lawyers, the people in the system, we all want to see that evidence. We want to see those records because this was a case of not just local notoriety. It spanned into international interest, okay?
Right.
And I think our justice system, as you know, Vito, operates on the idea that it's transparent. Courtrooms are open to the public. We now have cameras in the courtroom to make sure that people see what's going on and it's not a star chamber, and that we have a system we can be proud of because people have access to it, and it keeps the system honest. And when you seal records like this on a case that has this kind of publicity, it really makes everyone question what went on there. Was there money paid? Was this a favor done by someone higher up? Was this done because he was a celebrity? Tell me why this is done, and we want to hear all the facts about it and see it with our own eyes. And I'm hoping that at some point that's going to happen.
I think you're going to have to. I think there's going to be, you know, the police are not going to take it lying down. Nobody's going to take it lying down either way. Now, does Abel and Ola face any future charges on this, or it just depends which way this goes? Did they face any charges at the beginning when they came forward?
Well,
did they come forward, or did police found them?
I think police found them. And listen, should they, if they perpetrated this fraud upon our city and our police department, taking away what I believe are scarce resources to combat the terrible crime we have here in Chicago, they should be prosecuted, and people were calling for them to be prosecuted. But the prosecutors are saying, no, we're not going to charge them. Can they still bring charges against them? Sure they can. Will they? I don't think they're going to. But, of course, if they participated in it, they were just as culpable as Jussie Smollett themselves. You know, my guess is that this is what happened. This is conjecture. But I assume the prosecutor sat these two guys down and said, listen, you know, you're not from this country. Maybe you're here with a green card. But if we prosecute you for a crime, you're going to be sent back. I know you don't want that. I mean, I think you need to come clean here. I think you need to confess to everything. I think you need to throw Jussie under the bus. And maybe they were part of the hoax, but maybe they felt compelled to confess in a way that was a little stronger than maybe what the facts were. And so that could be one of the reasons the prosecutors decided not to prosecute, because it could be that these guys recanted or at least changed their testimony, which would, of course, make the case harder to prosecute in front of a jury.
Right. Now, he's gone out and hired a high-profile lawyer, one of the most high-profile lawyers, Mark Garagos. I was just wondering, and knowing so many of these people like you do, too, a lot of times they work a case for nothing if it's a tremendously high-profile case. Do you think that is going on in a case like this, or do you think he's getting paid?
That's a good question.
I had a lot of people ask me that question.
Yeah. I think Garagos is a point in his life where he's handled enough high-profile cases that he doesn't need to work for free. And my guess is that Smollett paid him a fortune to come in and step in on this case. And listen, when you are representing a high-profile defendant, and I have done this in the past, you have two considerations. You want to keep him out of jail, first and foremost, and you want to do your job as an attorney. But you're also cognizant of the fact that a celebrity has a reputation that drives his business. And if Jussie Smollett is made to look bad in public eye, even worse than he did when this whole thing went down, then he's never going to work in town again, and Hollywood is going to cut him off. But if he can somehow spin it to the public and to the press that this guy is a victim, despite what the charges are, then he can help save that career. So you've got to balance both of those things at the same time, and Garagos is very good at that. I mean, he's a very good lawyer, bottom line, but he's also good at spinning the whole media thing, which I think he did a pretty good job of.
Oh, yeah, yes, definitely. I read that the ratings for Jussie's show took a tremendous hit the first week that it went on TV after all of this. And, you know, that's not good for sponsors. That's not good for the whole mix here, you know? So Could that be a lot of people are mad at him now, or is it just the way it fell that he's not on the show for a while or whatever?
I think, from what I know, living in Chicago and being among the community, among people just talking, everyone hates this guy. First of all, you know, he's African American and he's gay, and people in Chicago are very, very accepting of all different races for the most part, and all different gender issues. But he turned on his community by making false reports. If that's the case, then we don't like that here in Chicago. We've got enough crime. We've got enough hate crime. We've got enough haters in this world and with what's going on in the world to make it up. So the police are distracted. And now the next gay person who comes out and says, I've been attacked because I'm gay, or the next African-American who's attacked for racial reasons, they're going to be looked at with you know, with questions. Did he make
this up?
Well, listen,
hold that point, Karen. We got to go to a hard break here. We'll be right back,
sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, with Karen Conti. Stand by. By David Poulter. It reminds me of maybe what the superintendent of police in Chicago, Eddie Johnson, is going through. Going home, see his family or whatever. How was your day today? Oh, I had a bad day. You know, it happens to all of us in our life. But, you know, this is, you know, in front of the cameras from morning to night. Wow. So what do you think? Have you ever met him, Karen, yourself? You know anything about his background? How is he liked or what?
Yeah, he's very well liked here. I have met him. He is a very plain-speaking guy. He came up through the ranks of the Chicago police, which is very important in Chicago. We've had a number of superintendents come in from other areas, from New York and from Boston, and although they've been very qualified and have done a decent job, you got to know the city. You got to know the people here.
Oh, I was just going to say that.
We're different.
No, you
know, New York is different
from
Chicago.
You can't bring in from
Chicago. Very well respected by the police department, the police officers themselves, which is important for morale at a time where I think police morale is at an all-time low. We have a lot of suicides among the police department, right now in the police department. So here's my spin on this, Vito, is that Eddie Johnson was personally ticked off because his office spent an inordinate amount of time looking into this case. They felt for him. You know, Eddie Johnson said, I'm an African-American man. You know, I've been discriminated against. I see these hate crimes. I hate them. And I'm, you know, basically busting my butt to get these people caught. And he just made this up. You know, this is not the kind of city that we are. You don't do that. And so what happens is he's angry now, right? And his police department has gone over the top to put a case together against Smollett. And what does the state's attorney do? You know, she just drops it. And she didn't even tell the police department. Now, listen, you know that if you're a victim of the crime, you don't have a right to tell the prosecutors what to do. But in this case, she should have gone to the police and she should have said, listen, we don't have the guns to prosecute this, or I'm going to drop it for this reason or that reason. But at least you tell the victim, and the victim here was the police department, right?
Right.
They were the ones who were pulled, the hoax was pulled on. So she owed it to them to say, I'm going to do this. How did they find out? How did the police department find out about this? They heard it on the news. You know, they were the last people to know that all of their hard work and all of those charges were being dropped for literally nothing. And they have a right to be angry.
Well, you know, on the police departments, things I've known, cases I've worked, there's always a thing, say when you got the three people eligible to be lieutenant, they pass the test and they're in the order, 1, 2, 3. Police departments will go and grab the number three guy when the number one and two are perfectly capable. You know, it's kind of like, well, I'm going to do this. This is what this case sounds like. We're going to go and do this, and what the heck, we're going to get blasted and everything else, but we're going to do it. Phone calls were probably made. This was going on. That was going on. Hey, let's just do the thing, all right? And whatever we're going to take, we'll take it, but then it'll be all gone. I mean, you follow what I'm saying? I've seen it so often.
Yeah, well, and they did it at a time where the case wasn't even up for a call. Usually the court calls are at certain dates and certain times. They were kind of in the process of sneaking into court and dropping the charges, and one of the news outlets caught it and got a whiff of it and went over there, and it was covered. But, you know, and I mean, we would have found out about it, but they weren't even going to make an announcement. And listen, One of the things about a high-profile case is a prosecutor, as you know, can make an example out of somebody. You know, I think Martha Stewart was made an example of. You don't lie to the prosecutors.
Right.
You don't lie to the government. And when you do it, we're going to prosecute you, and we're going to go hard on you because you're a high-profile person, and maybe the next guy is not going to do the same thing. They could have used this case as a good way of saying, don't waste the police officers' time. These are people who have other things to do. You're wasting our time on something frivolous for your own personal benefit, and we're not going to tolerate it, and we're going to make you an example. And this whole thing went the other way. We now get the message that it's okay to mess with the police department, and there are no consequences.
Oh, this is going to, please, this is going to escalate, Karen,
yes,
so much with cases. It's going to be chaos in the courthouse. People yelling at their defense attorneys and blah, 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 this and that. So were you surprised when you got all of this information, when suddenly you got up one day, hey, let's see, what's in the news? What's going on the Smollett case? Oh, there's no more Smollett case. What?
Yeah, actually, I was pulled in on the way to work by my local affiliate, who I'm in the legal analyst for, and I didn't know what was going on. And I went in, and I sat on the desk there in front of the camera, and I said, I have no idea what's going to happen. And when it happened, one of the things that was most telling was the prosecutor put out a statement that said, Jussie Smollett, we're dropping all the charges. He's forfeiting his $10,000 bond to the city, and he's done community service. As if doing community service and forfeiting your bond was the reason for dropping the charges. And as you know, I mean, I represented a serial killer who was a very good community man. He used to go to church. He did community service. He did charity work. But he killed 33 boys. Are you telling me that now all you have to do is community service and that you don't get the ramifications of what you've done? It sent the message that this was a pay-for-play. And in Chicago, we don't need any more of that because we already have the reputation of having a criminal justice system and a political system that's a little corrupt. So,
that's right.
You know,
tell our listeners again who that person was, wore all the clown outfits, and just in case they didn't catch me at the beginning saying that, so they know what we're talking about.
That's true. There's a lot of young people who don't know who John Wayne Gacy is, although there was just a television show about him that Donnie Wahlberg did. John Wayne Gacy was in Chicago in the late 70s. He was killing young men and boys and burying most of them under his house. He was a construction worker and a very prominent member of the community. He used to dress up as a clown for kids' shows. And it was inconceivable in the community that he could be guilty of this because he was so well-liked and so well-connected. But, yep, he was killing and torturing these young men and boys, and well, still a few of them have yet to be identified. It's a very sad case.
Well, I know that we're torn. We segued from one thing to the other. But I got to ask you, how is it to be an attorney when you're representing somebody like Gacy? How is that for you? I mean, I've had an attorney on my show that said, you know, Vito, I walked in the court. He's from Atlanta. Sometimes I walk in the court on a murder case, and one side loves me and the other side hates me. I can feel the hate. From as soon as I open the door and walk in, he says, I can feel that hate from family and friends. I mean, that I never forgot the way he said that. And I mean, what was said to you? I know, and then we'll go back to the original topic. But what anything said to you when you had to represent him?
You have no idea. Talk about hate. He was the most hated man in the country. I mean, I had death threats. I had a bomb threat. The whole building that I was officing in had to be evacuated because of a bomb threat. I to this day, I have hate mail. You know, but listen, you know, I obviously don't condone what my client did. I was just trying to save him from the death penalty. I didn't even try to get him out of jail, nor would I have been successful at doing so. But, you know, I liken it to being a doctor. A doctor doesn't say, well, sir, you're 200 pounds overweight, you smoke, and you've eaten nothing but Big Macs your whole life. No. The doctor goes in and does the surgery and hopes the patient lives because that's what he's charged with doing. I feel that that is my job, too. I look at the problem. I look at what the person's done. I don't judge the person. Of course, in my mind, I don't condone bad behavior, evil behavior, or any of the behavior that I see of my criminal defendants. But I take it as a doctor, and I clinically examine it, and I do what I can to get him the best result. And if that's, you know, staying in jail for life, maybe that's what the best solution is. But that's my job, and that's what I swore the oath to do.
I worked the Michael Skakel case for many, many years on working for Michael Skakel. 11, 12 years, I forgot how many years I've worked the case for him. And it's the same thing, you know, people, you know, how could you work that case? Well, because I believe he didn't do it. Somebody else did it. And, you know, I don't care what the people say. It's rough when you're doing it, you know, but you do what you feel you have to do.
You know what, and one more thing I want to say about that, Vito, is my theory is if everyone in the criminal justice system does his job, the judge does his job, the jury is impartial, the defense lawyer is an advocate, a prosecutor is a zealous advocate, then you know what? Justice usually gets done, and whatever that is, it is. But I'm not there to let people off. I'm not there to prosecute people. I'm not there to judge. I'm there just to do my part in the process.
Okay. Well, we're going to go to a hard break right now. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned. We'll be back. We'll get back a little bit on Jussie Smollett, and we'll go from there. So everybody stand by, please.
My kind of town, Chicago, is my kind of people, too. People who smile at you.
My crack engineer, Brandon. Brandon, are you there? I was just wondering. Brandon helps me out picking out the songs for the shows and everything. So I got to just ask you, what was that song there that you've just picked out for the end? Oh, okay. Just so I know. Just so I know. Because somebody's bound to ask me, hey, man, what was that song at the end? So thank you, Brandon, for that. Okay, we are back. Talking about Jussie Smollett with Karen Conti here. Karen, I think there was a question I wanted to ask you. I may have forgotten now in between the break.
Well, one of the things that I wouldn't mind talking about is the aftermath of this has been interesting because so many people are upset about the dropping of charges that the mayor had suggested that we make a demand on Mr. Smollett for the repayment of all of the money that the police expended in investigating this false claim, as they say it's false. And so about a week ago, the city wrote a letter to Smollett and said, we hereby demand $130,000. And my understanding is that Smollett has no intention of paying it voluntarily and that what we're looking at, perhaps down the road, is a civil lawsuit against Jussie Smollett brought by the city of Chicago asking for repayment of all the proceeds that, you know, all the money that went toward this investigation.
I'm going to give a guess here. This is just my guess, just from my background. I got a feeling somebody will pay that money. I don't know who, and they may not find out who it is. But just, you know why? To keep it out of the press anymore and make it go away. That's just my idea. I could be 100% wrong.
And no, that's a good guess. On one hand, I think Smollett, by writing a check, would be implicitly acknowledging that he did something wrong. So that's probably why he wouldn't write the check. On the other hand, he doesn't want the spectacle, because if a lawsuit is brought in Chicago, it's going to take a year and a half to resolve, and the press is going to cover it, and all the facts are going to come out, and the defense is going to be that this really was his fault. And so what he was trying to avoid in the criminal case, he's going to get way back at him in the civil case. And the case won't go away. And the network that employs him may not like that and may tell him to settle the damn thing.
I don't think he's going to continue on that show just after the last couple of weeks. I mean, you know, the the public, like you said, especially where you live and work, the public is like, man, what did you do? We already got a bad name here. What are you doing to us here? You know, that type of a thing. I think he's going to really get hurt TV-wise or movie-wise or whatever, for a while at least.
Well, I agree with you, but, you know, the celebrity world is fickle. You know, you
everybody
can do
likes
really
to come
bad
back,
things.
Right? Everybody
well,
likes
I mean,
to come
I
back.
I see a lot of men who did what I consider to be maybe wrong things, but not horrible things. I mean, they didn't rape women. Maybe they said something inappropriate, or did something that what I would say on the spectrum is probably on the low spectrum, and it may be what a lot of men have done in the past. And they're out of the limelight completely. They've been fired from their network. They've been fired from their multi-million-dollar jobs, and they're gone. Now, there's some men who deserve to be fired because they did some really bad things, and I'm happy about that. But you know, in this case, I'm not sure I can predict what's going to happen. I know the people on the set have all stood by him. They all believe in him. Maybe they know something we don't know, but it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. My guess is if his career is going to take off and go continue on, it's not going to be in Chicago. It's going to be on some other show because, you know, we don't like him here.
Right.
We just don't.
Right.
I don't know anybody who I've talked to who said, you know, poor Jesse, he really got the raw end of this.
Oh, yeah, right. That's terrible. That's terrible. No, I mean, I'd be very upset if I was living there. I'd be very upset if I was a police officer there, okay, just trying to, because I know, you know, a lot of the police departments, when they have trouble with corruption or different things going on, they go to work very depressed and everything. I've had them tell me before, Vito, you know, it's the same old things. You just got to go to work and who knows what's going to happen today, and that kind of a thing, you know. So it's too bad. Karen, would you like to tell the people, I mean, do you just work in Illinois or any other state or what?
Do I practice in Illinois?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I do. I do practice in Illinois. I practice in Chicago, in the Chicagoland area. I am licensed to practice in California, and I've done some cases out there. But so mostly I hang in the Chicago area. I practice in the area of family law now. I do other things, business litigation. What I really like to do is to refer people. I kind of taken a specialty in if someone is looking for a lawyer in wills and estates or in a criminal case or a personal injury case, I don't do that kind of work. So I like to take the time to find a lawyer because I usually know a good lawyer in that area. And I kind of, in my radio show on WGN, I spend some time referring people because it's hard to find a good lawyer. And the person who comes up on the Google search is not necessarily the best lawyer. So I kind of look at myself as sort of a referral system.
Okay, sure. Would you be willing to give your phone number or should somebody just email you if they have any questions
absolutely.
Or anything?
Yeah,
you have a lot of listeners,
and
they're gonna make comments, and I know the show is great, so you may hear from a lot of them.
Sure. My phone number is 312-332-7800, or you can email me at kconti@kconti.law.com.
Now what I want to do is just want to ask you, I've done this before. I took a five-year break from the show, but in the last couple of seconds, 10 years from now, what does Karen Conti want to be doing, or what would you love to be doing?
I would love to be doing a lot more media work and maybe a little less practicing law. I love television. I really like radio, and you do such a good job, Vito. It's good to be able to have a conversation and to be able to inform people and explain things in detail to people because I think the criminal justice system deserves that, and there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I hope that both you and I can kind of help people understand better.
You know, I love TV, too, just like you, but I tell people, I really, really love radio. I'm sitting here lounging here with my shorts on and, you know, the whole bed drinking Dr. Pepper or whatever happens. Because you could stretch out. You see, we only have a couple seconds. So you only got to stretch out on here. So listen, we're about out of time. But ladies and gentlemen, you're going to hear Karen Conti again next week. This is a two-parter. So please tune in next Sunday night. To hear Karen, we'll have interesting topics again we're going to touch base on. And Karen, thank you very much.
Good night, Theo.
Bye.
Take care.